Welcome to the episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable, where real people share real stories. We're coming to you from the Marriott McAllen Edinburgh Studio, right here in the heart of the Rio Grande Valley, the frontline and gateway of the USA. I'm Rico ATP, and riding with me is the one and only Quad Father.
They always see me rolling, baby.
We're just an ATP and a quad, a microphone, a mission, and a whole lot of passion. This podcast is about real people, real stories, and real power, spotlighting life after injury, adaptive technology, and the voices reshaping what it means to roll forward. Crushing stigmas one episode at a time. So buckle up, because at this roundtable, we're not just talking, we're building a movement. Daniel, how are you, sir?
Yay. I'm good, man. I feel good. I don't know. It's Monday. It's cool weather outside. We finally got a cool front.
Yeah, it's cold.
In the mornings, it's 48 this morning.
Something like that.
But it's nice. Like this, today was nice. Not too windy. It's just good weather just to barbecue. Unfortunately, I'm in work all the time, but you know, it's nice.
Imagine what Tyler's thinking.
Oh, dude.
If he's listening to this episode,
yeah, screw you guys.
He was like 9 degrees trying to figure out how to take ice off his vehicle.
No, I'm just trying to figure out when my next break is.
Yeah. You want to get spring break?
Yeah, we have a week in spring break, but that's March, and then we have one next month. Have you seen the new digs?
Yeah. Tell us about the digs, Daniel.
So the Marriott that we're at is newly renovated. Over $1 million worth of stuff that they did. All the rooms, beds, sheets, everything. All the rooms are done. Downstairs, if you walk in, it's a totally different look to it. So yeah, if you're looking for a good spot to stay, Marriott.
Yeah, it is nice. Downstairs, what they redid with the patio. They've got that fire pit. I don't know how many barbecue pits they have.
Yeah, they replaced all the barbecue pits. And then something in the pool and the pits in the back, I think they did as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
It looks really nice.
Yeah. Its color scheme was on point.
Ignite is awesome.
Yeah.
Whenever we go live, just to give you all some future forecasting, whenever we decide to figure out how to do video, we're going to be shooting out of Ignite, the bar downstairs. So it's going to be pretty sweet.
We'll chill outside in the patio area. Yeah. Hopefully the weather's still nice.
Hopefully. If not, it's going to be freaking hot and we can't do anything.
Well, we could. It's just... we'll get them to put those little sprayers up in the top.
Yeah, that's not going to help you.
I mean, I can go inside real quick and get a drink and then come right back. Mid-show, just come back.
So anybody traveling, I know our listeners in San Antonio, Houston, Austin, part of Texas, when you're coming, the Marriott's located right off 281 in Trenton. So you have real quick access to the expressway. Actually, you can also go the other one, Trenton to McAllen. So it's a really good area.
Yeah, it's right in the middle of basically McAllen, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Trenton, that's kind of where everything's coming up right now, and easy access to McAllen if you need to get to McAllen or the expressway in Edinburgh. So yeah, it's all good. It's all right there.
You know, I thought about right now is the Ignite downstairs and that whole patio they have, the layout. It's perfect for a birthday party.
Yeah. I've had a birthday party inside Ignite and I've had a reunion outside and so inside outside, but they do have, I know that Friday Ignite is bringing back, I think it's called Felt Fridays, where they've got like, they were kind of like a country theme thing and they've got different drink specials. Yeah. It's kind of like a theme thing. Yeah. I think it starts this Friday. So if you're not doing anything this Friday, go by Ignite and get some drinks.
All right, man. Well, Daniel, who do we have on today?
All right, buckle up. So before we begin, we want to let our listeners know that today's episode contains discussion of gun violence and traumatic injury. Please take care while listening. So today's episode is different. Our guest, Joseph Huerta, is not here to tell a story of statistics or headlines. He's here to share the human cost of violence, survival, and the long road that follows. Joseph is a survivor of a home invasion shooting that left him with a complete T11 spinal cord injury, but his story does not begin or end with that moment. Joseph has walked through homelessness, betrayal, extreme physical pain, medical discrimination, deep depression, and seasons of anger toward God. And yet, through it all, he has found faith, purpose, and a calling to speak truth for those who feel unseen. This is not an episode about glorifying violence. This is an episode about accountability, resilience, redemption, and the power of faith to carry someone through the darkest chapters of life. Joseph, thank you for your courage, your honesty, and your willingness to share your journey with us today. We're honored to have you.
Welcome to the show, Joseph.
Thank you. Glad to be on your podcast.
Oh, thank you for coming on. Through social media, I was, what I do is I look through social media and I find, if you follow me on Facebook, 90% of my followers are in wheelchairs or they're clinicians. And you stuck out, man. And when I was looking at your profile, just your drive, you're making videos, you're putting a message out there. And that's what we're about, getting a message out there. So I said, man, I got to get this guy. And, everything fell into place. And now we're having this conversation. To start things off, man, tell me a little bit, what was life like before you got injured, before this whole tragic event happened to you? What was going on in Joseph's life?
Well, I was in sports. I did cross country and track. I had magna cum laude. I had great grades. Everything was good for me until I became 18 and there was a family separation that happened. And my stepmom told me if my dad leaves, then I have to leave. And I became homeless. And yeah.
Dude, that's tough, brother. I mean, being homeless and having that experience, what did you learn, man? What did that teach you?
Taught me in a negative way. It taught me to not trust anybody. Your own friends will betray you. People will look down at you. I ask for directions and they think I'm begging. So I seen people in a bad light.
Yeah, of course. So what did it teach you? Did it teach you more of, about the real world? What do you think the lesson was?
Taught me how to work hard, how to not, get handouts. You know where I mean? How a lot of kids these days, they expect you to do things for them. For me, I had to work for it. So it taught me ambition.
I like that. Ambition. Daniel, how important is ambition with the students, man?
Dude, ambition's huge. I always say I would rather have a kid that maybe not the smartest kid, mm-hmm. but he's got the ambition and the will to want to do something. I'd take that kid over, that really smart kid that just kind of knows stuff, because I know the other kid's going to work hard and dig deeper and learn things about whatever we're talking about, even about themselves that they didn't know that they could do, instead of just coasting it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So yeah, I would take that kid over anyone any day.
Now, Joseph, tell me, how did you get to New Mexico from California?
Like, I travel. I went to go see my biological mom in North Carolina. Things didn't go well. You know, like, I was homeless. I was 18 when I was homeless. And so I went to live with my biological mom. She didn't really accept me because she'd rather be a party animal than take care of her kids. So I was on my own. I was couch surfing pretty much. And then I took the Greyhound bus to New Mexico where there's family members.
During that separation, it was just kind of a leap of faith to see where you could go and hang out with and find like this new home for you.
And I went to New Mexico hoping my grandparents will help me, but they left me at a shelter. So it kind of made me depressed.
So everyone that you trusted or you, these people that you looked up to and you loved, they just kind of turned their back on you?
Yeah. For my dad, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. That's where I stay with now. And my sisters, but they had their own situation going on.
So there in New Mexico, did you eventually find a spot?
No, I was homeless in New Mexico.
Wow. Were you kind of like jumping around from friends to friends? At any moment in time, were you like in a shelter or like living out in the streets at that point?
It was hard. It was cold. My feet would be numb. Like, it was hard to walk because my feet would be so numb. It was very depressing for me where I had to call a psychiatric hospital or something like that on me. So I just wanted to hurt myself, hurt everybody. I was just going down a dark path.
It's kind of a downward spiral at that point.
Yeah, so that's why I got into drugs and selling drugs.
Is that how the whole gun incident ties in?
Kind of. My friend that I found at the tent city, that's where I met him. He's the one that gets the drugs from Mexico. And then I was staying with him, and that's when the whole incident happened at the house.
Yeah. On our pre-show call yesterday, you gave us some details. So the way you explained to us, you were there staying with a friend, and then there were some other people that were uninvited that, we're taking advantage of your friend and you stood up for your friend, and that's what set everything in motion. Now, tell me about that, man.
Well, what happened was I was staying with him because I found him at Tent City and he seen me and he thought that I was a good person. He wanted to help me out. And then later on, after a few months of staying with him on his couch, he found this one chick. I'm not going to say their names, of course, but he found this one chick and her mother was staying with us. And then a couple of weeks later, her brother got out of jail or staying with us. And that's when all the arguments happened. It was like asking too much questions about drugs, like where he's getting from. I asked her, I was like, are you dating him? She's like, no. And I told my friend, I was like, she says you guys aren't dating. Something is just fishy. So I was like in between it. It seemed like they were trying to rob my friend, but I was protecting him. I was in the middle of all of it.
I can't imagine like you're staying with this guy. So you feel like sometimes you can't like, you shouldn't say certain things because it's not your place. But at the same time, your friend that took care of you is like being attacked or whatever. And like, then you've got these people coming in and you're kind of in a tough spot.
Yeah. And then he's there betraying me. After the shooting, after he told the cops what happened, like, oh, it was this truck that came by. And then later on, he switched up his script at the court saying, I don't remember what happened. he took her side over me that defended him, you know? So it was my friend and those people against me, and who they gonna believe? Someone tatted in versus, but they were on meth. I wasn't. I was clean because I have a daughter and I was trying to stay clean. But they came out dirty for meth.
So take me through the incident from them coming into the home and tell the audience the same story you told us yesterday, brother. Tell us what you're comfortable with.
Well, what happened was that after I told them to get the F out, I was tired of them, you know, just disrespect my friend and stand on our couch and eating up our food. I end up going outside because my friend just came back at the house and I told him what happened. I'm like, hey, they disrespect you behind your back. I'm tired of this. I told him to get the F out. And they're still packing. And me and my friend were in the room while they were packing. And the chick that my friend was dating or so-called dating, she was on her phone messaging somebody or trying to get a hold of somebody. And then the guy that shot me, he was telling the chick, let's go. I got a handle. Let's go. And that's when they end up leaving. And I was still talking to my friend in the room. And that's when I heard a knock on the bedroom door because we had it closed, but the front door wasn't locked. So yeah. So anyways, I opened the door after they knocked and I seen a rifle aiming straight at me. And I was like, oh shoot. And I closed the door and I ran into the closet and I seen a rifle just aiming inside the closet. And I thought, dang, is this how I'm going to die? You know, just think about my family and stuff. And I seen a stick in the closet. And so I grabbed the stick and tried to hit them with it, but they took it from me. So I barged out. And that's when they started beating me left to right with their rifle and their handgun. And I just had my hands up and I just tried to protect myself. And I started getting all dizzy and I couldn't really see. And then one of the guys that they brought back with them, the one with the rifle, he ended up throwing me on the bed and I tried looking at him. And that's when he started gouging my eyes. And I was just like moving my head out of the way, trying to make him stop. Anyways, somehow I was able to get up. I think maybe my so-called friend, he ended up helping me. And so I am getting up. I tried running out of the room. And when I ran out the door, I heard a few gunshots and I fell right like middle of the room to the front door, if that makes sense. So I was by the couch. And when I became paralyzed right away. And so I was by the couch. I was trying to crawl out of the front door. And I was trying to tell myself, I was like, get up, run. Like, I don't know why I couldn't, because I didn't know nothing about being paralyzed. I was just confused why I couldn't run. So they end up coming at me, you know, aiming their guns at my head. And I'll just have my hand out telling them, don't shoot me. I have a daughter. Don't shoot me. And my daughter was 2 months old when that happened. And I hadn't seen her since. But when they end up leaving, I heard that they end up kicking me in my area. Well, that was what was documented on the news report. They were kicking me below my paralyzed area. So after all that, my friend told him to get the drugs out of my pocket because I had stuff on my in my pocket. And my scale and things like that, because the cops were about to come. And I was reaching out to him and I was like, help me. I was reaching out to my friend and I was telling him, why didn't you help me? Help me. You know, he told me he got hit on the top of his head. And I was like, I got hit too. And when I woke up from the hospital, I had a bunch of scars all over my head. So once the ambulance came, it was all in and out. I couldn't really remember like how long it was. It felt like 5 minutes and they came, but I was like dazing in and out of it. So, and then I just remember them carrying my body out of the house, asking me questions like, was this a drug deal?
So looking back right now, you know, this is some heavy stuff we're taking in. What would you tell yourself, your 18-year-old self today?
What would I tell my 18-year-old self?
Yes.
Okay. So what I would tell my 18-year-old self is, go to school, you know, go to college. Of course, I graduated high school with good grades. It was just the people I started hanging around with because I was looking for family. So I would say go to college and be around good people. Go to church, because I wasn't religious at that time. Go to church, make new friends, make new family members in a way. So
just let's talk about, so you got beat up pretty good. You got some head injuries. You get shot in the back, right? You're in and out of consciousness, of course, not sure what's going on. And you're at the hospital. I'm sure you had some surgery. You were under for a while. I don't know if you know how long you were under or not, but when you finally came through and you woke up, who was there for you and who, or there with you? once you woke up?
My dad and my stepmom was there. I was surprised because I hadn't seen them in years since I've been homeless. So it meant a lot for me to have them there. So
How did they get the news of you being there?
My tia, my aunt, got a message from my friend, my so-called friend, that I was shot because he looked her up because we had the same last name. And he looked her up on my Facebook account. And then my tia told my parents that I was shot. And my dad was telling my sister that I was shot and that they need to go get me. And that's when my sister was telling my dad to bring her brother home.
How many days had gone by since the actual incident until you saw them there? Was it a couple of days?
Honestly, I have no clue.
No idea?
Yeah.
It was just kind of, it was, all of that was probably a blur for you anyway. So
yeah,
it was kind of hard
to figure
out what was going
on. I have no clue how long I was under. It wasn't documented because I was transferred. And so, you know, certain things were missing. They were just worried about reviving me. I had blood transfusion. You know, they flew me to New Mexico to El Paso Hospital.
Yeah, different level of trauma center. So they probably were better equipped over there for that. So you had a lot of blood loss. So you're kind of in and out from that as well.
What I found kind of interesting yesterday when we talked to him is that he didn't have a spinal fusion surgery.
I don't know if...
He didn't.
Yeah, a lot of times, I don't know if that's because... I mean, it was a gunshot, so...
It was complete, though.
Yeah, I just wonder if you get shot, like, the bone shatters and there's nothing to fuse, maybe?
Geez.
That's something we'd have to ask.
I had a fractured spine from L1 down. It's been fractured, so maybe that's why they couldn't fuse it.
Yeah, I would think that it's
the
pieces
bearing
or something. I don't know, or maybe it was just too close. It could be. There's a lot of things, right, that can go into it. They're probably afraid to make it worse than what it is.
That's true.
Yeah, gunshots. Because a lot of the people we've talked to, it's been some sort of like a physical injury. But aside from Joseph and forget his name, who was shot as well. Like,
oh, Armando.
Yeah, I don't know what type of like things a doctor looks like to say, you know what, this is okay to fuse, and this is probably too bad or too,
that's true,
too destroyed to fuse, maybe. Do you know, Joseph, just off the top of your head, if it's just L1 or is it like L1, L2, L3?
It was,
you know,
up, down. It was L1 down, all the way down.
Gunshot there, or was it like one or two?
I was shot with the 45 in my spine, and then the first shot, it grazed my shoulder. Luckily, it missed my head. And then the second shot, that's what paralyzed me.
Okay. So let's talk about that for a second. At what point, right, did you fully understand that I'm paralyzed? Like, at what point was it? I know you woke up, and I'm sure you were still probably dazed and confused, but at what point did you find out, or did you realize, damn, I might not ever walk again? At what point was that?
That was when I was in rehab, because I didn't know nothing about being paralyzed. I thought once I get a back brace that I'll be able to walk again. So I remember telling my stepmom, I was like, when are they going to give me the back brace? I just want to walk again. And, you know, she was like, they're working on it. They just got to mold it.
What was the doctor saying at that point? Like, they never told you anything?
No, they just asked me to pee in a urinal. And I told them I can't. They didn't tell me I was paralyzed.
Wow. You know, that's the first time we hear that. Because I've talked to other patients in my experience, people that I meet or have met along this thing called life. And when we talk about when they learned about it, it's funny to me how often I hear that they weren't told that you probably won't walk again. I don't know if it's a thing that they just don't want to say.
Yeah,
because there's always a chance, right? There's chance. Yeah. You can never take that away. But I wonder if they just kind of walk around it, right?
Maybe,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he was in the hospital first. Then 2 weeks later, he got sent over to New Mexico from El Paso via ambulance.
Maybe they thought he had already been told.
Right.
I don't know.
So also acceptance, you know, there's also that part about it too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a lot of moving factors that go into that.
What could, at that point, Joseph, what could you do? Like, so you're being moved, right? You're talking about a brace, so I'm sure you're doing some sort of rehab. What could you do physically? Like, at that point, time has gone by, maybe a month?
What I could do was barely move my head. I couldn't move, like, much below. I was just so weak. I was just weak. I couldn't write my name or anything. I was just...
Yeah, because you were also going through a brain injury because of the hits to the head.
It took me a while to relearn some things. Like, my dad will walk past me and I'll be like, when'd you get over there? You know, or the doctors will tell me something and then my parents will be like, what did they say? I was like, I don't know, I forgot. So my dad became my power attorney.
So it was just a lot of confusion, a lot of kind of like in and out. That's tough. Like, it's tough enough to be told, like, you know, I can't move this part of my body anymore. And then throw on top of that, like, this confusion. I'm sure, like, forgetfulness is very frustrating for you. I'm sure you got to some dark places at that point. But, I mean, you had your dad there, so I'm sure that was very helpful.
Yes.
I want to get this up to speed for myself. So, 18, kicking ass in high school. He comes homeless due to something that's out of his freaking control, right? Just shatters his world. Then he, you know, moves around. Now he's, you know, this happens to him. That's some heavy shit for somebody to deal with, man.
Yeah. Especially finding out that I cannot have an erection at age 21. It was hard for me as well. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man.
That was one of the stories I usually hear from people is they always want to try if they could get it up down there. And for me, I tried in rehab, nothing.
That's real talk. Like, that's one of those things where, so the lower the injury, the higher the chance goes as far as that, erections and things like that.
So
that
like being able to get an erection on your own?
Yeah. Okay. Gotta remember, there's two causes for an erection. One is mental, right? Get turned on, basically. Uh-huh. And the other is like the physical part of it, right?
Correct.
And normally, like, let's say, you know, regular SCI patient, a little higher, maybe C-spine, T-spine, they get an erection. But what keeps it going is the mental part, right? Mm-hmm. There's a physical, but there's also mental. But when that kind of gets blocked, you can't maintain it for as long as you'd like to. And again, it's different at different levels, right? So unfortunately, one of the things that happens is the lower... the higher the chance of something like that happens. Not to say you can't, but in this case, it probably have to use drugs or different things to do that.
Well, let's do some real talk. So what options are there? So, I know there's pumps. There's suppositories.
Yeah, there's like stimulation, and then there's medicine that you can take that increases blood flow there.
And then there's surgery.
Yeah, and then there's surgery. There's different ones. So what you would have to do is talk to your doctor and say, hey, you know, I'm sick. So, you know, I want to try to see if I can do this, right? And what are some of our options? Just like anything, right? Different people are going to do better with certain ones, right? You've got like Viagra and Cialis and HIMS and all these things. Well, it'll work for different people. Like, because at the end of the day, it's just increasing blood pressure. That's what it is. That's what it's doing. It doesn't, you know, whether you have a spinal cord injury or not, it's not that the way that medicine works has nothing to do with the nerves. Okay. It'll all do with blood flow.
To contract to get the
blood. It's all blood flow at that point. Yeah, so... It's something you'd have to have a talk with. Now, whether or not you're going to get any like pleasure, that's the other thing, right? Like, so since we're doing real talk, right? Like
real talk.
One of those things, and again, this is, I've talked to other people about this and it kind of changes where you get pleasure from at this point. I met a guy who, he was an older gentleman. He had been in a spinal cord injury for 20 something years when I met him. It was about 10 years ago.
What level?
He was a C.
Wow, dude.
So he said that his pleasure point, oddly enough, like he got pleasure whenever his girlfriend, I think she married him eventually, his pleasure point after that became his earlobes. What? So she would rub his earlobes and that was his turn on. That was his trigger, right? So it becomes different. So it's no longer just about, am I getting pleasure down there? Like what? Right. You're having to find an emotional connection different than it was before and then a different physical connection to enjoy yourselves, right? It's not going to be the same, but you just have to navigate that carefully.
Do you think that happens post-injury?
Yeah. I think if you want to be with somebody and you want to try new things, you're both going to be comfortable enough to navigate some of these things and find what helps both of you.
I also wanted to mention about this erection situation, because when I was in rehab, I met a guy where he was telling me how he wanted to have kids the natural way, which is through injection, I think, having a baby. But long story short, she ended up cheating on him because she wanted kids and he couldn't because it came out deformed and it died, which is sad. So she cheated on him. And so just dating life has been different for me because it's more about acceptance and they don't know what they're really going to be dealing with. I think that's why they, you know.
It's, yeah, you've got the two sides of it. Just the sex for pleasure and enjoyment and having fun with each other, right? And then there's the, I want to have kids and start a family. So that's a totally different topic, right? Like,
yeah.
At this point, you're talking about, okay, viability of sperm, right? Like, because we sit, yes, it increases the temperature, right? And when we're standing, you know, the testicles are free floating, right? They're outside of our body for a reason, because our body is a certain temperature, but when they're outside of our body, it's not as hot, because sperm count is really what's important, right? And so that's why they're outside of our body. But when you're sitting down for long periods of time, that temperature kind of goes up a bit. So the viability of sperm kind of gets messed up. And that's where, again, talk with a doctor, say, hey, what are things that we can do? Is there a way to get fresh sperm, right? How are things we can go about doing that? You have to go to a clinic. There's different ways that they can get it out. You know, some are mechanical, some are like, well, drugs. It's just different ways of doing it. And then, you know, you got to be careful, right? Because sex, again, we've talked about this in the past. If you're going to have sex and you, like in your case, you don't have no sensation, that's totally different. The chances of autonomic dysreflexia kind of go
that's
up, right?
Right. You were saying that.
So like me, I'd be able to have some sort of sensation and be like, something's going on, right?
Uh-huh.
I have the sensation for it. It's just not exactly the same as it was before. But in the case of somebody that may have a complete injury, they have no sensations. They have to be a little bit more careful maybe. So you have to, you know, there's again, this is where communication comes in with you and your partner, and a good conversation with your doctor about things to do in case something goes bad, right? So there's a lot to think about.
I think I understand this. Help me out.
Yeah.
So when you're incomplete, you still get that sensation like, oh, something's going to kick in, right?
Yes.
But when you're complete, you lose all that, but it still kicks in.
So like Joseph, like below your level of injury, like your legs, you have no like sensation. Like if somebody hits you on your leg, you don't feel that, right?
Yeah.
He won't feel that. That's usually what happens with a complete injury. With me, like an incomplete injury, if you hit my leg, it feels like I can feel a pressure, or I feel like somebody's hitting me with a feather. That's what I feel. Like, think about this. Oh. Think about when your foot falls, like you're sitting on your foot, your leg, right? And then you get up and you feel that tingling. And have you ever hit your leg?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it feels, alive. You're like, my leg feels dead. That sensation is what I feel. I can feel it a little bit. It's barely there, but I feel it.
Huh.
That's kind of how it happens. And oddly enough, I feel more in my toes than that would be like in my hips.
Yeah.
Right? I got told once that sometimes sensory, it comes up from your toes upwards. Yeah. I don't know why, but yeah, when it comes to nerves, it gets weird, but there's a lot of options, especially sex or kids, right? Yeah.
Gotcha.
So not to say you can't have sex, you can totally have it, but you know, one of those things that you're going to have a talk with and then get to that point.
On a little quick side note, if we get really into detail with this, with I think it's episode 11 with Eric's episode.
Yeah, you should check and listen to that.
Yeah, listeners that are actually that like this topic, check that episode out. So your time over in New Mexico with the rehab, we talked about it yesterday. It's kind of different compared to the rehab that, let's say, the quad father had at Craig. You had mentioned yesterday that you really didn't get much rehab there. You actually learned more from the patients than you did the therapy and the clinical team.
Yes. I learned from other patients, because when I was learning from the people that worked there, they showed me videos of how to transfer. And so it was kind of a little ridiculous, and it just seemed they didn't really know how to help. So that's why I wanted to help others, because I'm sure there's others in my situation or who needed help, just like I did. But I did learn from other disabled people. They taught me how to transfer without a board. I remember this one chick, she told me, you know, you could transfer without a board. And she showed me how. And I thought that was pretty cool. So when I became an outpatient, I started helping other disabled people in there, showing them how to transfer and flip to the side on your bed. Yeah. And that's why I started YouTube, to help others.
Yeah, I think it brings up a good point. Sometimes, I mean, yes, if you're lucky enough, like I was, to be at a good hospital, you learn a lot. But sometimes you just got to find stuff on your own, and you're lucky enough to find people that are willing to show you some things. It's so important. That's why we have this community, right? To get these things out there.
That's what we do, what we're doing. I don't want to jump ahead. Joseph has, on his YouTube channel, he's got quick hits, quick little videos addressing a topic. So when we talked yesterday, he'll get a message from somebody on social media, and he'll go make a video real quick about it. And I saw one recently he made about transferring from his wheelchair into his shower chair and how he goes through that. So tell us about how it came about, how you got that idea.
Of quick tips?
Quick tip.
Okay, so I started Quick Tips because when I was in rehab, I'll be looking at videos and they make videos real long, like 10, 20 minutes for something simple. And when I'm like trying to learn something, I want to learn right away. So I usually look at short.
I am with you.
Yeah.
Which was your first video?
How to transfer in and out of the car.
Tell me, how do you transfer? What are your quick hits right now to our audience on transferring into a vehicle?
Well, I like to grab onto the grab bar of the vehicle and I just swing myself in. So it's real simple and easy, at least for me. So.
Yeah, well, you're a beast, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. I don't know if I mean, something like that, it's weird because I've seen.
How would you transfer?
Into a car?
Yeah.
So I've seen quads do it, right?
Uh-huh. I have too.
But you can always tell that it's something they do all the time because they have calluses in their arms in certain areas because of all this transferring they do. You can always tell. Like, you can see it.
Oh, fact.
I would have to. So ideally, I would need a car whose the height of the chair is the same roughly as the height of my wheelchair, right? Mm-hmm. For sure. I don't want to mess around with a whole like higher or lower because there's no way I could do that. And then things I would think about, leather seats so I can slide. So my shorts or my pants don't like pull down and then I'm low sure. rider, right?
Right.
But the problem is warm seats here in the valley and leather seats, you got to be careful, right? So I need to think about those things. And then how am I going to put my chair into the vehicle? Again, I've seen it done.
You would need a lift? 100%.
So it depends on the release, right?
Okay.
Well, it depends on the release. So
I can do quad release. Yeah.
So there's quad releases,
yeah,
right?
There is.
But am I strong enough to lift up each of these individual chairs, that the tires for my chair that has power assist, right? And then I could probably do it. And then am I strong enough to get my chair in there? And I say all these things because I could probably do all these things. But the real question is it worth it for me to use my energy doing that or doing something else? And for some quads or some paras, it's worth it to them because it's more independence, I guess. But for me, give me a ramp and I can do
you
it just
a
as
sweet
quick.
Ride, bro.
No. So if you can do it, by all means, go for it, right? Like, Joseph's a beast. I've seen, like, he's a big guy. So if I could lift myself up, I totally would. But it's just one of those things where, you know, where am I going to expend my energy?
I'm going to tell you a story, an ATP story, an experience. So I was doing a wheelchair clinic for a spinal cord injury, a lower thoracic injury. I did the chair, spec'd it out nice. Huh? I mean, I think I did a great job, right? Of course. That was where I screwed up. I did not take into consideration transferring into the vehicle. So I never asked what type of vehicle you're driving. So it was a higher, a mid-sized vehicle. And she had a hard time transferring in and then having to lean down and pick up that frame and toss the box.
Yeah.
You know? So luckily I was able to get it replaced, but that taught me something. When we're doing evaluations or we're doing our stuff, we need to take in consideration the lifestyle of the end user.
I think the top three would be, are you going to be going in and out of a vehicle? And are you going to transfer yourself, right? The bed height? Right?
The door height also.
Yeah. And then are you transferring into the shower or not? Right. So So all of those things I think would be important when you're specking out a chair, right? Like, which one of these things are you gonna do more often? Like, if you're specking me, right? You wouldn't need to worry about a vehicle.
No.
The main thing, like if you come to my house, what is the thing that you're transferring into most often? My bed, right? I have a person that helps me get into my shower chair with a Hoyer lift. Right. I don't need that. So the only time I transfer into anything at home is my bed or the couch. The couch is about the same level. We just got some new couches, same level as my chair is. With a little help from my parents, I can get in and out, no problem, right? So, but that's what I would be telling you, right? But I'd imagine like for like Joseph, for example, he would, because Joseph, like, do you drive right now?
No, I don't.
So what, like, say Rico does go see you, what is the thing that you transfer in and out of the most?
Well, my dad drives me around and then also I have van drivers through my insurance.
Do you transfer yourself into bed?
Yes, I do all that.
Like that would be like the main thing in his case, because, you know, beds are kind of high and it's kind of expensive to get a new bed, right? That's lower. And so how would you do that though? Like as an ATP, what are some things that you could do? Because I noticed that chairs are pretty low, right? So what are things that you all need to do for that? What are the things that are out there?
What's the most functional way I can get that wheelchair for you? You know, and you said it, what are my activities? And depending on the level of the injury, of course, I'm going to do a different system.
Right.
If you have more upper body control, of course, I'm going to try to get you as light as possible and try to get your lower extremities, you know, marry into the frame So as your upper body's moving, your frame moves with you.
I got you.
Yeah, it becomes a very intimate part of the body.
Right.
Yeah, man, it's something you got to take into consideration. Are you planning to go back to work? Are you planning to go to school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, transportation? Are you going to buy a vehicle? So we got to talk to them also. Moving forward, when you get this wheelchair, you're going to be kind of set into a certain type of vehicle that you can get if you plan to be a driver. You know, the lifted truck's out of the window, you know?
Yeah. And some things to think about there, Joseph, like, you know, I'm sure you want to drive at some point. So those are some things that you want to consider when, if you do get a new chair or you're getting a vehicle, what works best with what you have right now that would make your life easier as far as getting in and out, no problem. Because strength-wise, I'm sure you can do it. I see paras do it all the time. Like, they just muscle their chair in and out, no problem. So I'm sure at some point you'll get there and it'll be like butter for you.
You can tell which wheelchair users are drivers because their frames are scratched.
Yeah, they're always hitting the side of the car, right?
Yes.
Damn. Well, let's see. Where are we at? So.
Okay, sorry. We went to the weeds there, but that's good stuff.
I want to mention my motivation in rehab, like what helped me. My anger is what helped me. My stepmom was telling me that you're going to always rely on a button, my own stepmom, and that hurt me. But my dad was more encouraging. And so I will use my anger to help me. I couldn't transfer. I'll punch the mat, you know, and my dad will tell him, it's all right. That's how he learns. Let him learn. So I'm learning to transfer. And I'll look on YouTube how to transfer and do certain things. And my dad will be gone, you know, to go eat because he's been at the hospital with me. So, and I tell him, oh, I learned how to transfer on the toilet. So, yeah.
Little victories. Yeah. We've talked about little victories. Yeah. You pick this one thing and whatever it is, right? Anger, maybe a little frustration. I went through that. Like, there was times that I was like pissed and I was like,
you've said before, it's okay to get angry and scream at the world, right?
Yeah. I think it's okay. I think it's healthy for you to get angry, scream, cry if you have to. It's healthy. Just let it out, right? I mean, of course, not towards the people that are trying to help you. I know sometimes, like, our nurses and our PTs and OTs get the brunt of it sometimes. And they know that we don't mean it. But like, especially when it's family, like, just take it. Your family's there to help you for the most part. I mean, I know you said your stepmom didn't help much there, but like, you use that as motivation for you. You turn that anger into something positive, which is, I mean, it's a great thing. You did it right. Like, you used it, you learned from it, and you just kept it going forward.
Yeah. And my family, I'll ask them for help and they're very supportive. Especially in the beginning, but they wanted me to learn on my own. So when my shoe fell off, I'm like, can you help me put my shoe on? They'll just like ignore me. They'll just ignore me because they want me to learn on my own.
It's like, what would you do if we're not here, right?
Exactly. So I end up getting mad. You know, I was punching things like the ground and stuff, having a little tantrum. And so I learned to put my shoe on. So that's how I learned.
Oh, that's good.
Joseph, like we had talked yesterday, anger is not good. I think yesterday when you shared that, a lot of the anger started contaminating your faith at this point with the depression and just, you know, the way things were going. But there was a moment, right? There was a moment where everything changed. Tell us that.
About my faith?
Yes, dude. I mean, yesterday we were talking about where it was at and then,
I was always angry and depressed when I was first paralyzed. I lost weight and stuff. So I just ended up hating God. I hated just religious people in general. I'll see YouTube videos of Christian content pop up on my YouTube channel. My phone. And thinking now, I feel like it was God trying to like get my attention, like, hey, watch these videos, these Christian content. But anyway, so I will go on my phone and I will like talk bad about these religious people. Saying, God, why did God flood the earth? Why did God do this and that? And, but I've been having dreams like 2 years ago because I've been a Christian for 2 years now. And I was having dreams about getting eaten by maggots for the past two nights. And then the third night, I was on my phone again about to talk smack to religious people. And I seen an image of me falling, burning in hell, screaming. And that's when I repented. I'm like, I'm sorry, God, I will not mock you because there's this thing that says God will not be mocked. And it's true. And so fast forward, this happened like a few months ago, like maybe 6 months ago. And I asked God for a sign for my family, you know, to show that he is real and show that he's the true God. And it was just a lot of negativity that day. So I just decided to pray. Something just encouraging me to pray. And so I prayed and I asked for a sign, and something like urged me to record. I recorded and I seen this shooting star like jet by me, and it was amazing. And I showed my family, I showed everybody on social media, and you know, so hopefully my faith will help encourage others to open up their eyes and see that God is real.
Okay, let me add some color to that. He has the video on his social media and you see this light. I saw it. There's a light coming in from, this is my right hand, the right hand side, right? And it makes a 90 degree turn and it shoots right over him. It's on
video. Yeah, I saw it too. It was, I don't know what it was.
I can imagine, what was the emotion like then, man? What did you feel?
Honestly, I felt really happy. I showed my dad, I showed my whole family. Some people say, oh, weren't you scared? I'm like, no, why would you? Like, I think that was the Holy Spirit. So I was just very happy and I felt encouraged. It's like, God finally answered me. Like, I was in the storage unit when I was homeless, crying out to him and nothing. And then all of a sudden I prayed to him with faith, with true faith. I cried out to him and that happened.
Yeah. Amazing. I encourage people to go out there and watch
check out that video.
Yeah. And leave a comment for him for sure. Joseph, you are dealing right now with a pressure wound. I think yesterday you mentioned the stage 4. And you've been dealing with this for years. Pressure wounds are something that's, unfortunately, you're very familiar with, right?
Yes. I've had this ulcer for 3 years now. It's a stage 4. I got the CAT scan or x-rays. I forgot which one it was. And it showed that there's like an infection in the bone. So it's kind of scary for me right now. My whole life, you asked me about, have you done any hobbies? Well, no, because I've been dealing with these ulcers for the past 5 years. And I've been paralyzed for 6 years. So I have no life. I've been bedbound and depressed, you know, like lonely, and it sucks. I would not want anybody to have pressure ulcers because their life is just gone. I should have took it seriously in rehab when they told me about pressure ulcers and to always turn and stuff.
Yeah, pressure ulcers, no joke. Me personally, luckily, I was scared of them, like you said. So,
yeah.
And it was hammered away what they were and what they could do to you. And I remember seeing some patients in the hospital that had ulcers the first couple of weeks, and they couldn't really join us for any of the stuff that we were doing until they got healed.
So how does it happen, Dan?
Let's talk pressure ulcers 101, right?
Let's do it.
What is it, right? So it's just skin tissue damage from prolonged pressure. And we know, like, I don't know how long you sit. How long do you sit in your chair when you can?
I only sit for about 5 to 10 minutes. That's what the doctor said.
That's all you can do right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So me, on an average day myself, I'm sitting for about maybe 14 hours, maybe 16 hours on a longer day. And that's a lot, right? So pressure ulcers are going to occur from prolonged pressure, right? Now, there's very common areas that we can get them from. So the butt cheeks, right? The ischial tuberosity, the bones that we're sitting on all
your
day.
Your ITs.
Your ITs, right? There's the sacrum, the coccyx, elbows, heels, sometimes the bone that sticks out in the back of the neck, right?
Yep.
So those are your, because sometimes shoulders, if you shoulder lay on blades. Your side, right? Shoulder blades. And those are your common areas, right? And there's, so Joseph said that he's stage 4. So there's, let's talk about some of the stages, right? So
let's do it.
Like stage 1, it usually presents itself as like a red spot, or it might be warm to touch. And there's a way to check it. Like, it's called blanching. So if you push down on an area of your skin, right? If it's healthy, it'll turn white. And then when you let go, the blood comes back and it turns back to the color. But if you've got like stage 1, a lot of times these areas, these red areas, you push down on them, they don't blanch. Right? So they don't turn white. They just stay red. And that's usually a telltale sign of stage 1. If you notice something like that, like immediately, hey, talk to my doctor. What are things I need to do? Maybe spend less time on your chair so your body can heal a bit, right?
But by the time it's starting to turn red, the skin, the subdermis is already breaking down.
Yeah, but you still have, your skin hasn't broken.
It's not open.
Yeah, it's not open, which is huge, because once it's open, you get problems.
For sure.
But you're still, it's still okay. Like,
but that's the reason it jumps so quickly,
yeah.
Right? Because by the time that thing opens up, again, all the tissue under there is
right
dead.
And again, it's different. So let's say like myself and Joseph, right?
Uh-huh.
He's a complete injury and I'm the incomplete injury. The way it's going to, and we're just talking about stage 1, the way that it'll present itself to each other will be slightly different, because I might feel something that's odd that says, hey, Dan, maybe check down here. Where in him, he won't feel that. He's just going to have to, right?
For
I used to
me,
have this mirror.
Wow.
Yeah, go ahead.
For me, when I know when I have an ulcer, I'll start getting sick. So I know some people, they'll probably get like leg spasms, like at least for urine, like if they need to go pee. But for me, I start getting sick and that's how I know to check. But by then it was a stage two. So
where is it at right now? Where do you have the ulcer?
Bone. I have it on my sit bone, my right sit bone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it gets tricky. And then you get stage two, right? When you're talking about. So that's where you get like the more shallow opening, the skin loss, some blistering sometimes. And that at that point, you've got an opening, right? Again, anytime you've got an opening to your body, anything, it's going to be open to infection, right? So that's where you start getting the aches, the fever, right? Because now your body's fighting something. And again, got to be careful because this is one of those things we talked about. We'll talk about it all the time. Autonomic dysreflexia, right? Yeah. Something's going on that your body's fighting or increasing your blood pressure. And that's a secondary problem there, right?
Oh, you know then what? Yeah, I actually had an increased blood pressure. My blood pressure will always be high, at least with my hip. When I had an infection on my hip, my blood pressure would be like 170. So
Yeah. No, it jumps up. So this is classic autonomic dysreflexia right there. Blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes up.
Yeah.
Do you get headaches when that happens? Like bad? Does your face like turn red a little bit?
I don't remember. It's been a while.
Okay. Yeah, those are just some of the things, goosebumps, things like that. Then you get into stage three, deeper wound. The fat is more visible at this point. And then stage four, right? This is full lost muscle tone. The bone's exposed.
Yeah.
Like he was saying, like, once the bone gets exposed, you can start to deteriorate the bone. And that's a different kind of worms you've got to deal with. Yep. There's even like deep tissue, like the ones that it doesn't look like anything is on the surface, but underneath all that, like you were saying, there's it's obscured, right? There's some dead tissue. Yep. So at that point, you know, what are some things you can do about it? Well, there's
for me, since it's on my butt, it's not just another flap surgery I need to get. It's where they have to get a colostomy bag because they don't want any stool to get inside the ulcer. So I need a colostomy bag. And then they'll do a flap surgery. And then I want to reverse the colostomy afterwards. But it's like so many surgeries.
Yeah. And then you're protecting your body against one, right?
Yeah.
But now because you're having to be on more on another side, then it's like, now I have to be careful with this side now. So like you said, right, you didn't pay much attention at the beginning to what they were saying. It's one of those things where, you know, if you're at a hospital, they kind of just, bam, bam. Like, remember I told you when I was first hurt, everyone had a little clippy on their shirt and there was a timer. Every 15 minutes,
For you,
you would hear alarms going off and that was our time to do a weight shift, however it was. And, you know, it gets to a point where it just becomes muscle memory and every once in a while, and you see me, I'm always squirming around.
Floating.
But yeah, keep your skin dry, keep it moisturized, check for, you know, it's one of those things you just got to be on top of, right? Hopefully if you have like a provider or somebody that helps you, share that point with them. Like, hey, you're here to help me do all these things, but also check the back of my skin, right? And check here, right? My provider, she's amazing. I love her to death. She's always like, any little thing I see on my skin, right? She's like, hey, what's that? Like immediately. So I know.
Awesome, man.
And just so, you know, and then most of the time it's nothing. It's just like a scratch here, scratch there, but that's, you know, that's nothing. It's just one of those things that for anybody out there dealing with spinal cord injury or just sitting in a wheelchair, just
even,
you know, be careful.
Even wearing socks, you got to be careful because I have so many ulcers wearing compression socks and actual socks. It just sucks because I'm skinny below. Everything's just bony.
Yeah, I got you.
What kind of treatment are you getting right now? Are you getting a wound vac?
Right. I had a wound vac on, but the ulcer's too narrow that it wouldn't fit a foam inside. So I'm doing wet to dry. I'll be going in surgery on February 17th and they'll be reopening it since it's healing from the outside in. So the skin is closing up quicker than the inside. So it's deep. And so they're going to clean it up, clean out any infected bone, and hopefully it'll heal with the wound vac.
It will, my friend. So we're talking about pressure wounds. Do you know where it starts? Where you should, prevention is weight shifting. How often should you weight shift, Daniel?
I try to do it. I always told, no, don't wait longer than 30 minutes, but I do about 15 minutes. They're really conservative with us. So like 15 minutes, I do it more. Like I said, I'm lifting up myself, you know, several times. Every couple minutes, I just move around, but no more like than 15 minutes because I think at this point, my body's kind of like, it starts to tighten up a little bit if I haven't moved my legs around or something. So I'm just kind of used to that. You have to kind of listen to your body, and that's what I do. Yeah.
Some techniques are forward lean. I've seen you do it. Lean, 30 to 60 seconds. Yeah. How often? As much as you can, all right? lateral leans, left or right. Mm-hmm. How long do you have to hold that position? 30 to 60 seconds. Yeah. If I'm just picking up my butt cheek, that's not a true pressure relief. I'm just picking it up and I'm coming back down. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the oxygen and the protein back into the muscle.
Right.
You know, that's the whole point of offloading pressure. Someone who's got an incomplete injury, they sit, they don't have that ability pretty much to do a shift. So now they're going to have to do a push-up.
Right.
You can do a wheelchair push-up. Any type of movement that's going to offload you sitting and your, you know, like gravity pushing down on you, you need to get that movement, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Now we've got, I've had some patients that can do a partial weight shift. So way we can accommodate that is by doing a custom cushion. So some wheelchair cushions that are out there, of course, everybody knows Rojo, right?
Yeah.
Rojo came out in the 80s, was the first true marketed pressure relief cushion. So everybody in the going into school was taught Rojo, Rojo, Rojo. Mm-hmm. Yes. Do I like Rojo for everybody? No, I don't, because they're air cells, okay? So if I have keys in my pocket or I have a pencil in my pocket and I'm doing a transfer, a sliding board transfer, if I puncture one of those cells, it's shot.
It's all shot.
Yeah, it's down. Your cushion's down.
Okay.
All right? They do make different types of Rojo cushions. They make the hybrid, which, you know, the pelvic well itself is the Rojo insert and the rest is foam just to give you a little bit more support.
Okay. Easier to replace that little section instead of the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so there's difference. But to get a true sense or get a good idea, you need to get pressure mapped. Pressure mapping, bro. So pressure map is just like a big sheet, and it measures how much pressure is being distributed from the pelvis. We get that pressure map sheet over the cushion. You sit on it, and we're looking at our, you know, a little feedback, and we're able to see what spots are blowing up.
See, like a 3D map, sort of, where more of the weight is at?
Exactly. Okay. So I can see if your issue is blowing up on your right, then I know I need to go in there and I need to make a modification of the cushion.
I got you.
So if I get somebody who is, let's say, Joseph right now, I would get him on a Java cushion, right? Think of a toilet seat.
Right.
Right. That's the cushion. So it's built up on the growth trunk canters on the very top, and also to build up to try to offload any pressure. So that your hips are what's supporting you. You've got nothing
in the middle.
Nothing, dude. Total offload, 100% offload.
Wow.
Yes, those are customs. Now, if I get somebody like, for example, Joseph, I would pressure map him. I would see how he's sitting. I would just get as much feedback as I could get from him. And then I would do a custom cushion. Companies like Stealth, Comfort Company, Matrix, you can design your how much foam you want, if you want to recess here, if you want to offload pressure by building up a certain part. We have as ATPs the ability to design a custom cushion from zero.
And when you say recess, that's like a small area missing. Yeah. So there's no pressure.
Exactly.
Everything else, like 80% of it is there, but like that 20% is just that little area that doesn't. Okay. That makes sense.
I would tell Joseph.
Because wasn't there like a cloud cushion back in the day that did something like that?
Yeah, that does the same. I like it. You know, I haven't thought about that in a while about the cloud cushion.
But that's the only one I remember. I remember those little pockets because they really felt kind of cool, but I don't know if they make those anymore.
You can make them. Yeah, that's a good cushion.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if they made those anymore. I just remember that.
Yeah.
Back when we used to work at PMT.
I'm going to see if I can get a demo. Thank you, Daniel. Hey, Joseph, what kind of cushion are you sitting on?
I have a Rojo, and it's like a hybrid. So I'm able to take the cushion out. And so my hip bone is pretty much hovering.
It's hovering, okay.
Yeah, so that's that pocket, the pelvic pocket where it's got that Rojo insert. So I like that. Transfers are so much easier. Let's say you're trying to do a 2 or 3 hop transfer. Mm-hmm. It's like quicksand because those cells have to have so much pressure in them, but they give. So you're pushing against something, you know? First of all, you have poor trunk control and then you're on a hammock pretty much. But yes, Rojo works. It does. And you have to calibrate it daily. You have to go in there and you have to make sure there's at least an inch between the base foam and your body.
Oh, okay.
So it has to be calibrated daily.
Wow.
Yes, dude.
It seems like too much work.
A lot of work. But you have other cushions like Matrix makes the Libra. When I was working for Invacare, we launched the Libra cushion, right? Uh-huh. And we took it over to Tier Hospital. And Terry Blessing, shout out to Terry Blessing. He did a fantastic job getting that cushion in there. When they pressure mapped the Libra against the Rojo, they were pretty close. Of course, Rojo had more offloading, but Libra was pretty close, dude. So they started ordering that. So if I have an active user, I'm going to suggest the Libra. The drawback, Libra's 3 pounds.
Damn.
So I'm adding 3 pounds to the wheelchair.
Right.
So that's something I got to take into consideration too. You know, it wouldn't matter for you because you have power assist.
Yeah.
But somebody who doesn't, 3 pounds is a huge difference.
It's a lot to push all day. Yeah. I don't really think about cushions that often as far as the advancement that they've gone to. Because last time I saw, I mean, I keep it pretty simple. You know, mine's just like one of these J2 cushions. And
we'll get a rep in here. I'll see what comfort company. I talked to Michael Duane today, so he said he'll come on, but we also have the Matrix rep also. Okay. Eddie can come back on with the Axiom. Yeah. We'll get some people on here to talk about some cushions.
Get some cushions out.
Joseph, what kind of wheelchair are you pushing yourself in right now?
What's it called? A tie light? I'm using a tie light.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's all right. I have a new one. There's still modifications they need to do, such as a backrest. They need to have it more curved.
Yeah, more contour.
So that, more, yes.
Gets to go tie between your shoulder blades?
Yes.
Okay.
That's up there.
Yeah.
Can your back increase your chance of bottom sores? Can that
actually,
can that cause it?
That's a good
question. A little bit?
I can make an argument for it. So the back that he has right now, it's a tall back. He has pretty good trunk control from what I've seen. I would not put him
I have no core stability.
No core? Okay. Well, then that's why he's in a tall back. But yes, someone who is more of an active user, I would go with this lower back. That allows me more shoulder movement. If I have upper body and I'm able to have shoulder movement, if I put a tall back and I'm blocking the scapula, you know, it's defeating the whole point.
Right.
You know, so there's different things you got to take in consideration. Like when I do my wheelchair clinics at DHR hospital, I get on the mat. I have them sit on the edge of the mat. I get right behind them. I cradle them between my legs and I pull them back to me and I just put my hands on their back and just try to find the best optimal height I can get you. Believe it or not, if the more active you are, the lower the back, the better.
Okay.
You would think I need a taller back and more support. No.
Yeah, I started off with a taller back. But yeah, you're right. The more active I got, I couldn't like turn and grab stuff. Yes. And it always felt like it was in the way. That's why I kind of removed the push bars back here also, because they were always in my way.
Yeah.
I've every time I get a chair, it's always gone down about an inch or two every time.
Yeah.
I tried a low back before and it was hard for me to sit.
Did you feel a little bit wobbly?
Yeah, I felt real wobbly and I just had no stability.
Yeah.
Because I cannot sit up on my own.
Yeah. It's one of those things, same. Every time I've gotten lower, like the first couple of days, I'm like wobbling. But eventually it just, you know, now it feels weird to be in a taller back.
Yeah.
But that's, Joseph, that's something that comes with time. Like it's been 18 years for me. You're what, year three or four? One of those things that at some point you might want to just say, let's just try it again. Once you're healthier again, and because you're going to realize that you're able to do a little bit more, you'll have to work on your core a little bit. That just comes with just practice. But I think once you find that you get that guy and you feel comfortable, you're going to be like, dude, I don't know why I waited so long to get a lower back. It frees you up a little bit.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah, I'm all about the mid back if I can get away with it. Like I said, that's why I do my trials too. I get my hands on you, I find out where you're at, and then I write it in. It's an art, my friend. It's an art. So, Joseph, tell us about what you are doing as far as, I know you've got a clothing line. I saw that. I'm going to get one of your shirts, bro. I just got to get paid first. Can I order one? Your advocacy, you know, just being a voice for disability, man. So, where's Joseph today, man?
Honestly, I'm just trying to make the best of it. How's nobody just trying to be somebody?
Yeah,
I like that.
Helping people with what you can.
So tell me, what is inclusion matters?
Inclusion matters is because me and my dad been trying to get certain equipment for me, but it's been hard. They say I don't need a flex mirror, you know, to see my pressure ulcer. And they'll just say, why don't you just stand up and look in front of her? And my dad had to remind them that I'm paralyzed. Just like it was hard to get a bed, and I'm still trying to get a new bed. So my dad just felt that they're discriminating against my disability. He just made it so hard. They're like, why do we need it? So that's why I made the shirt, Inclusion.
Yeah, it's a nice shirt.
It's not, and unfortunately, it's just like we spoke with Josiana last episode, and now there's there's just so much stuff going on where people just, they don't want to give you what you need, or they don't think that you really have this diagnosis that you have, and I do need these things. It seems like a thing that's getting worse now.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty sad because I was told that I'm really paralyzed. I need to do testing, like go to doctor or rehab to get tested to see if I'm actually paralyzed. That was very hurtful. So trying to prove yourself I'm paralyzed, it was, you know, it got them.
Yeah, don't get me started.
Yeah, right? People say some stupid shit sometimes. Like,
yeah.
You know, one of the worst things, and people out there listening, don't do this. I've heard this before. Like, you're not trying hard enough, or like, it's just, you don't want it enough. It's like, don't say that. Like, ugh. I would do anything to do what you're doing. And I've done a lot of what, it takes to do that. And some of the workouts that I've had since I got hurt have been some of the hardest workouts, even way more than before I got hurt. So, you know, don't say stupid shit like that. I know, as stupid as it sounds, it comes from a good place. Like, they're trying to motivate you in their stupid way, but don't say stupid shit like that. Like, that's just the worst thing to say to somebody. Like, you don't have enough ganas to walk? Dude, if you know what kind of will I have, you know, I wouldn't be here.
Very true.
Yeah, it's one of those things, we just try it. Like, they don't know what we do. Like,
there is a thing called manners that pertain to people with disabilities.
Yeah.
Like when you're talking to somebody in a wheelchair, get to their level.
Yeah.
You know, make the effort, you know, think. You know, one of the things when I was first being trained by senior ATP is like, when you're going to go see somebody, don't ask them how they're doing. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah.
You know? So little things, yes, there is etiquette and there are manners. And I'm glad you both brought that up.
Yeah. And don't touch us on the top of the head. Don't pat our head. It's going to be okay. Don't do that.
Oh, no.
It doesn't happen often, but it has happened.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Oh, especially all the staring.
Yeah.
Like
sometimes,
you being in a wheelchair.
The only ones that are allowed to stare are the kids, because they really want to play on the wheelchair. That's really why they're looking at it. Yeah.
That's something I take in consideration. I try to design the chair to look as badass as possible as far as color schemes, as far as what I can do for you guys. Because, yes, they're going to look at you. But my whole thing is, I don't want them to look at the wheelchair. I want them to look at you. So if I can blend the wheelchair into your frame and show more of you, that's why I'm not a big fan of putting a bunch of accessories on a wheelchair that aren't necessary. Right. I want it clean and nice.
You know, that's why I
want it an extension of your lower extremities.
Dull colors like black or dark shades, because I don't want... I mean, they look cool. Like, I would see myself in a neon chair if I was, like, doing something athletic.
Well,
but, like...
I've put lights on them. Yeah. I've put stickers on them.
Yeah.
Colors used to do the spinners.
You know? Oh, yeah.
The chrome spinners. Yes, dude, embrace it. You know, let me make something badass for you, man.
Right. Oh. I need it to work. I need to do what I needed to do. And if it's got a splash of life, then awesome.
Yes. And the custom wheelchairs is, like, for me, I will order a frame from somebody. A bag from another manufacturer, a cushion from another manufacturer, accessories from two different manufacturers, foot strap, leg strap from Body Point. I get all these freaking parts, and then I build your chair. That is true custom rehab. Like, Jiana, she got a key chair with an Axiom bag with an Axiom cushion.
That was such a
all bag. From the same manufacturer. And she deserves so much better, and I am working on that. But, you know, there's a lot that comes into the custom mobility. I don't want to get on a soapbox. Joseph, talk to us about the TBI. We were talking earlier about something that happened to you yesterday that, you know, triggered something for you.
Yeah, very blurry for me when I first woke up. It took me a while to remember things. I have a neck tattoo on my neck, and I remember stepmom, what's that on my neck? And she told me, it's my tattoo, my new one. You know how it flakes, your tattoo. So she told me what it was, and the doctors will tell me things such as what's going on with me, like my infection and things like that. And I'll tell them, I don't remember like what I told my parents. So that's why my dad has power of attorney for me, so that the doctors could communicate with him instead of me, because I'll forget.
Some of their like short-term memory stuff is kind of still, you're still dealing with that a little bit.
Yeah.
And you had something happen, what, yesterday was something hit your door?
Oh, yeah. There's a kid, like maybe 18 years old or so, and he rang the doorbell and he threw a pie cone at the door, and it was a bang. That freaked me out. I just got flashbacks of the home invasion, and I told my dad, don't open it.
Yeah.
And so my dad, he got his gun, of course, and was looking outside. And
is that something that you experience from time to time? Because it sounds like a little bit of PTSD. Is that is that something that's happened, you know, on several occasions since you got hurt that you deal with a little bit?
I deal with PTSD a lot, such as birthday parties where balloons would pop, and I'll freak out. I'll get all scared and scream.
I think this brings up a good point, right? Secondary conditions for spinal cord injuries.
Talk to me.
There is, you know, we very different experiences, right? Like between me and Joseph, for example. Everyone, we know the paralysis part, right? That's the main thing. Huh? But all these other things that we don't normally think of, right? Like PTSD in this case, right? Because of how it happened, right? Or the change in blood pressure, or you know, memory loss, or, you know, the way that your body reacts to certain things, right? Everyone, depression is one of the biggest secondary conditions from one of these, right? So it's one of the things that, yes, the paralysis is the star, right? It's the thing that we talk about most. But we kind of forget that all of these injuries and all of these things happen for very different reasons. Accidents, gunshots, sports, right? Just jumping a fence, like a friend of mine, he was just jumping a fence and he got caught up and he tripped and hit, right? Mm-hmm. So, but they all are experiencing other things aside from that paralysis, right? We think about it as the main thing, but a lot of times it's those other things that kind of like have a bigger effect sometimes, right? Like you can't go to a party without hearing a balloon pop. That kind of, that fucks you up. Like I was in an accident about a year and a half ago, and anytime I'm going against the grain, right, and somebody gets into a turning lane, it freaks me out because when the guy hit me, he went from turning lane straight into oncoming traffic, and it, you know, it gets me a little bit nervous. Like I see somebody doing that, I immediately want to tap the brake because I'm like, dude, wow, is he going to turn in front of me? Like there's little things like that that we don't really, we don't say out loud or we don't think about because it's not the main thing.
There's another incident that happened when I was first paralyzed. My little brother stayed arched in my room. Nerf guns and started shooting at me, and that freaked me out. So it's just certain things like that people don't understand.
I still have a hard time. I mean, I've gotten so much better at it, but at first when I used to have to visit a hospital, I used to get like this weird sensation in my gut and my chest. And I still get it from time to time when they ask me to go see patients. I still get it, but I've kind of like just told myself, hey, Dan, it's just a good place. You're there to help somebody. Just concentrate on that. But I remember at first it was really hard for me to go into, it was more a hospital. I could go to the doctor, no problem. But like a hospital setting just brought back, you know, I was there for 4 months. So it was just one of those things. But yeah, I remember the first couple of years, it was tough. But we don't, you know, those are things that we don't normally think of, right?
Yeah.
It's more about the paralysis. But, you know, these people are going with all sorts of, there's the constant mind game that's going on in our head. And it's just a daily struggle, right? And we don't talk about those things as much because...
Yeah,
you know, it's not the main part, you know. Mm. But PTSD and like getting and also, shot, that's scary. That's a different beast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also another incident with PTSD is when I tried going around the block on my neighborhood, which is a good area. You know, there's no crimes or anything. But anyways, and there's these kids that stick their head out of the truck and yelled at me, and that freaked me out. So I'm scared of the house because I just see people as evil. So I haven't left the house on time except for to my appointment.
That's your rhythm.
Yeah. Hopefully it gets better for you. Like I think it's one of those things, baby steps. You go out little by little.
Absolutely.
And just kind of get out there. I mean, first things first, right? Get healthy. Yeah. Get healthy enough to get on that chair again and get out there and, you know, get out and see the world that's still out there waiting for you.
So thank you for joining us. But before we let you go, we're going to give you a chance to put out your social media so people can find you and where they can get your merchandise. And talk to them about your YouTube channel.
Yeah, so you could find me on Facebook at Joseph Huerta. My YouTube channel is 11 Paraplegic. And my merch you could get at https://11merchproducts-6056.bigcartel.com.
Okay. Sounds good. And we can put all this on the
I'll put it on the post, and I'll put that actually on this episode in this description.
Yeah, for those of you listening that want to check out the merch, you can we'll put the link there.
Okay. Final thought, Joseph?
Any last words?
About the little kids, you know, just like the youth, I want to encourage them to just be on the right path. Don't try to be someone you're not. There's always going to be somebody bigger and badder than you. That's what my grandpa always told me, and I never listened. And I learned the hard way, just being around the bad type of people.
Gotcha. I can say this now. Listen to Grandpa.
Yeah.
I can say it now.
Yeah, you're a grandpa.
Yes, Miss Little Larry Jane. Okay, well, Joseph, well, thank you for joining us. And everybody, thank you for tuning in and supporting this podcast and this episode. If you want to reach out to us, you can find me on social media. It's Rico Segovia ATP on Facebook. And that's the best way to get a hold of me. Emails sometimes gets lost. But thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.